uploading the virus.
Eagle One, the package is being delivered.
Hello out there in cyberspace. You know, it's been a wild few weeks for crypto. Well, it's been a wild few weeks for crypto and NFTs. The whole market took some hits, but the crypto markets especially have seemed to spiral in the last few weeks. At the same time, there's been so many hacks, stolen apes, and ransom tokens, it's hard to keep track of them all. Well, today we're going to go through some of the news, who lost what and how, and also, what is it about the blockchain that makes it so vulnerable to these hacks and schemes? I'm Matthew Galt, and this is Cyber. So, on this week's show, we've got Motherboard Senior Staff Writer Lorenzo Franceschi Bicarai and Motherboard Senior Editor Jordan Pearson. Thank you both so much for coming onto the show.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you to the viewing audience. We had some problems with Discord. There was an API outage, and we had to quickly switch between Zoom and Google Meet and get this thing working on OBS. It was a fun little scramble, but here we are now, and we're ready to talk about the winners and losers of the crypto market. So, Jordan, I know it's been kind of a rough and weird few weeks with crypto and OpenSea. Can you kind of give us a rundown of what's going on in the market? Is this the crypto crash, or is news of the blockchain's death completely overblown?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you can squint and see my profile picture here, we have Jack Dorsey, Barry Silbert, Najib Bukele, Michael Saylor, and they're all working at McDonald's now because this has not been a very good time for crypto. Everyone is freaking out and panicking. Basically, if you read Twitter and read anything from someone in crypto right now, just assume they're in a state of panic. So I wouldn't say it's the crash. I wouldn't say it's the death of anything, but it is a crash, and it's a nasty one for sure. So everything is down. Bitcoin has lost like 50% of its value. Not the first time it's happened. Probably not the last time it will happen. But it's dark, man. Blood in the streets type vibe, I would say.
All right. Well, up here at the top, moving off the market and into kind of the realm of exploits, I want to talk about this OpenSea flaw that allowed people to buy NFTs at rock bottom prices. Joseph Cox wrote this for us, but I know both of you are pretty learned in what's going on here. So, Jordan, real quick, for people who don't know, what is OpenSea?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really interesting thing that happened and is still happening, actually. But so OpenSea is maybe the most popular marketplace for NFTs. So it's a peer-to-peer marketplace. You know, people plug in their NFTs and they sell them to each other. But it's really not as simple as that because OpenSea is it's what you'd call a centralized service. Like, it's working with blockchain tokens, but it's a website, it runs on databases, and a lot of things that happen there are just happening internally, centrally, like a normal website. But it's where people go to buy and sell NFTs, but increasingly it's also becoming something that's implicated in, all sorts of different like scams and schemes that sort of exist in the space between like its centralized nature as a marketplace and like the decentralized nature of the underlying tokens that it's working with. And that's kind of exactly what happened in this instance you brought up.
Okay, so what was this vulnerability? What happened here exactly? I love the quote in the deck. "I just lost an ape, guys. I'm crying. How did this just happen?" Tweeted a user whose NFT was bought for just $1,750 and resold for $190,000.
Yeah, tragic. Absolutely tragic. Hate to see it. So what happened here, and this is still happening, by the way. So obviously these NFTs are really expensive. Like, these apes go for like hundreds of thousands of dollars. But what this person woke up one day and realized was that their NFT had been purchased on OpenSea for much, much less money. How does that happen? So OpenSea tells users, like OpenSea itself, like warns users basically that like due to the quirks of how it's set up. So let me just back up a little bit. Okay. So NFTs are these tokens that are on this decentralized blockchain. And when you send them, it's irreversible. there's nobody who you can call and complain and be like, please give my NFT back, freeze this transaction, whatever it is. OpenSea is a marketplace it's a centralized website. So like the thing is, like, doing anything with Ethereum costs a lot of money and gas. And OpenSea, to get around this, because, like, you know, that's a usability problem. Like, people aren't going to be like wanting to do a bunch of stuff on OpenSea if it costs them thousands and thousands of dollars to do that. And OpenSea doesn't want to like pay, you know, crazy, crazy amounts of fees itself. So a lot of what it does is it happens like just internally. Like, it's not all hitting the blockchain live. A lot of it is like batched and like just done on the back end, like a normal website. And then it hits the blockchain to settle, basically. So what this means is, like, you can list an NFT at a certain price on OpenSea for free, but to like kind of revoke that, you have to pay a gas fee, which people don't want to do for obvious reasons.
Right. So, the gas fees are pretty exorbitant, right? They can be upwards of a couple hundred bucks.
It can be like even $50, which, like, you know, maybe people just don't want to pay that, like, just to, like, you know, cancel the sale of their NFT or whatever. So the thing is, so what happens is, when you list your NFT for a low price and you don't cancel it, what happens is that price is then broadcast on OpenSea's API. It is scraped by other like marketplaces, like Rarible scrapes OpenSea listings. So the issue is, if you like put this listing on OpenSea and you don't go through the process of like posting a message on the blockchain to revoke it, these listings like still exist and they can be fulfilled. So, you know, some clever person is out there scanning, looking for like lower listings that like this person might not be aware of because they didn't go through this like complicated and janky process of like canceling their earlier listing on the blockchain. They just sweep it up. So they're just like, I just bought your NFT for like this low price. And like, technically, like, I guess it's not really a hack. It's just like this like really janky process that just arises because like of this like centralized marketplace that's working with these like decentralized tokens. And the problem has gotten so bad that now, like, I literally just saw, like, there's someone who is like now like kind of like put on their cape and they're like actively buying people's NFTs that are vulnerable and just posting on like Twitter, like, hey, if you own this NFT, DM me. I just bought it for super cheap, because if I didn't, someone else would, and they're not going to give it back to you. So, like, again, you're in this kind of like realm that happens like fairly often, where, like, you know, there's no blockchain police except for the real police, obviously. But like, so like, you're in this space where, like, you know, code is law ostensibly, so it's left to like some random person to like defensively hack everyone else essentially and then just be a good guy and give it back. And that's what's happening.
We've got a question. I think you answered it, but I just want to be absolutely clear. We've got a question from first time viewer in the chat. It wasn't entirely clear to me from the article. Were they listing them in the first place? And it sounds like these were like old listings, basically.
Yeah. So my understanding is, for this to work, you have to list it at some point. Okay. For like a lower price. Yeah.
Gotcha. Ash Tyrannic, I hope that answered your question. One more thing, and then I want to switch to Lorenzo and get into like some other hacks that are happening. I want to read OpenSea's their comment, like when we asked them for comment, when we reached out to them, when they're talking about this. Since this issue was identified, we've taken it incredibly seriously and worked to ship product solutions for the community. This is not an exploit or a bug. It's an issue that arises because of the nature of the blockchain. OpenSea cannot cancel listings on behalf of users. Instead, users must cancel their own listings. It's OpenSea's priority to make users aware of all their listings, and we're working on a number of product improvements to address this, including a dashboard where they can easily see and cancel listings. In addition, we've been actively reaching out to and reimbursing affected users. We have not communicated broadly about this issue because we do not want to risk bringing it to the attention of bad actors who can abuse it at scale before we have mitigations in place. And it certainly seems like the cat is out of the bag, right? What do you make of this? Is this enough, JP? What do you think?
I mean, it's an interesting statement for sure. Because, like, they're right. I don't think this is, like, a hack or a bug. I think this is just, like, a really janky situation that arises from a centralized service running on top of like something that's decentralized and global and is irreversible and involves money. Like if you're not on your toes, someone else is going to, who is like smarter or more savvy, is going to take advantage of you. And code is law, so there's nothing you can really do about it. It's not even the nature of the blockchain. Like I find that a little pernicious as well. Like it's not the nature of the blockchain. It's the nature of like how this centralized service is set up and interacting with the blockchain that leads to this like circumstance. Yeah.
You've said a couple times now, code is law. Can you explain that? I know that that's part of like, that's lingua franca, I guess, in the blockchain world, but can you kind of explain like what that means, what that ethos means?
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying it a little like tongue in cheek, like ironically, because
I got the snark in your voice.
Yeah, law is law, but it's just the basic idea that like this code is immutable, it's irreversible, and what happens on chain is what happens. Like that's reality. Like your tears are not reality, your intentions are not reality, your mistakes are not reality. What's written on that ledger is reality. And when it comes to hacks and scams, like, I mean, that opens up like a whole world of pain for obvious reasons, you know, like code is law. Like it's good to like, you can say that like theoretically, but then like when a literal thief criminal is telling you code is law because they stole your shit and you can't do anything about it, that's like, that's a whole different ball game.
Speaking about worlds of pain, Lorenzo, the last 7 stories, and we're looking at them here, that you've written at Motherboard have been focused on these crypto hacks and kind of the fallout from them and how they've happened. Let's get into, I think, one of the more well-known and famous ones, because, you know, it had a buzzy Matt Damon ad and they've purchased an arena. What was the crypto.com hack? How much was taken? What do we know so far? Mm-hmm.
First of all, I really recommend watching that ad. I had not seen it before writing the story, and it's incredible. It's really, really, really nice. Crypto.com is one of the largest cryptocurrency exchanges in the world. I think it's the 4th, according to one count. It's huge. You probably, if you follow sports, you've seen their ads. I've seen them in like Formula One races, soccer matches. They are sponsoring the Los Angeles Lakers arena, something that cost them $700 million. They're a huge company that's doing a huge marketing push to become the leader in this space, you know, basically fight against Coinbase. So what happened a couple of weeks ago, or not even actually a week ago, feels like a couple of weeks ago, is that they... Well, initially, a few users complained that they were seeing their crypto being stolen from their crypto.com wallets. There was some confusion until crypto.com admitted that there was what they called an incident. But everything was fine because...
I love that phrasing, by the way, an incident.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, no big deal. Nothing to see here. But they said that no customer funds were lost, which was a little confusing because they also said that there were like $15 million had been withdrawn as part of this incident. So it was really unclear what was happening. They were not very forthcoming. And then this week, they updated their statements. They put out a new blog post with updates, and it turns out that the hack was actually $30 million. Again, they kept saying that no users lost funds, but that's just because they refunded them. So, you know, the customers did lose the funds, the hackers stole them, but crypto.com refunded them. We don't know who the hackers are. You know, could be really anyone. There's been a lot of, in the last couple of years, North Korea has been really focused on stealing cryptocurrency, but who knows? I mean, you know, crypto is so huge now that it's such a big target for everyone. There's so much money in it that it's a great place to try to hack.
Is it just because it's the Wild West that all this stuff is so new and there's just kind of no... I mean, I feel like, you know, my knee-jerk reaction is, oh, we need some regulations in place. But I feel like the issues here are deeper and more fundamental. It's the technology itself and the way it interacts with other technologies, right? And either one of you answer.
I think there's a few things here. One of them is that this is still a relatively new industry that is getting popular very fast, and everyone is trying to get into it. So it's not very mature in terms of cybersecurity. Crypto.com is different. They're huge, but some of these like other companies that have been hacked that we will talk about later are like startups that are just trying to get in the game, you know, raising some capital, hiring developers, maybe doing some marketing. Cybersecurity is really not their main focus right now, even though the hacker's focus is very, very much on cryptocurrency platforms and companies. The other thing is that, you know, we have to remember that a lot of this, you know, a lot of the fundamentals of the blockchain and cryptocurrency, which is the fact that it's, you know, every transaction is public, smart contracts are public, immutable. That is actually bad for cybersecurity. If something is running on a smart contract that it's impossible to change, and it was made, there's a flaw in it, then there's nothing you can do. You have to do something that, like, it's not like you can push a patch like with a regular software. So, and again, like, but the main issue for me is that these people are just not really investing in cybersecurity enough.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. You can change things on the blockchain. You can change these smart contracts, but it's just like you have to get a bunch of people to agree to it, and it's costly, right? Or am I completely wrong? Jordan, I feel
like... It depends.
Like,
okay. Yeah. I mean, like, you can, like, upgrade... Like, once something is coded and on the blockchain, it is there forever. But like you can, if you know what you're doing, you can like code in ways to like change different things and change different parameters and stuff. You can also like, you know, fork if things get real bad, like this is like total, you know, nuke situation. Like you can like fork, maybe you're referring to this, you can fork a chain and like that requires consensus for people to move on to the new chain with the new rules that wipe out the old hack or whatever happened. This actually happened to Ethereum in 2016, I think. Old Ethereum is now called Ethereum Classic. I mean, it's interesting. It's interesting. This whole thing is an interesting issue because, like, on one hand, like, when you think about it, none of these hacks are, like no one is hacking Bitcoin. Like, Bitcoin is as secure as it was the day it was launched. Like, this is software that's been out in the world, on the internet, in public, for 10 years, securing billions of dollars, and really has not experienced a significant like cybersecurity incident of the protocol itself. So when you think about it in those terms, like Bitcoin may be one of the most secure pieces of software ever released in the real world. But like, I think where I'm kind of thinking of this is that, like, you know, centralization and decentralization are not like solutions to anything on their own. Like, I think that centralization is good for some things and opens up some avenues of attack. I think decentralization is good for some things and opens some avenues of attack. Like the immutability and like irreversibility part of it is like, that's great for like, you know, preventing like double spends and all of the stuff that Bitcoin and derivative blockchains are designed to do. And you've because of that, you've actually created this like money system on the internet that so far hasn't like failed really, which is incredible. But by the same token, those innovations like enable hackers to steal stuff and then they can just disappear and you can't get it back. So it's kind of like this double-edged sword of like, you know, what it enables in terms of security, and then also like the holes that it leaves open in terms of security and like new avenues of attack and stuff like that.
This is a good segue into talking about another one of Lorenzo's stories. Lorenzo, what is the multi-chain hack? Where did it start and kind of where are we right now with it?
So it started before, it went public last week, early last week, but it started earlier a security company found the vulnerability in Multichain, which is a platform to exchange different tokens, different crypto tokens. It used to be called AnySwap. So this company found that it was possible for hackers to drain wallets from users on Multichain unless these users changed a setting, some permissions on these, revoked permissions on these tokens. There were, I think, six different tokens that were vulnerable. And this got really bad when Multichain announced the vulnerability and alerted users that they needed to revoke permission. So they had to do this because they could not themselves fix the issue. You know, it was a issue with the smart contract. They couldn't change it. So the only way to stop hackers from stealing cryptocurrency in this case was for the users to do their own, to fix it themselves. The other problem here is that, like a lot of the cryptocurrency world, it's all, you know, a lot of it is pseudonymous, a lot of it is anonymous. Multichain doesn't require users to sign up with emails or any other way to contact them. So they had no way to tell their users that they needed to revoke these permissions except for just screaming into the internet, which meant that hackers saw it and thought, well, maybe we can do something about this. And in a couple of days, hackers stole $3 to $4 million from users on Multichain. This got interesting at some point because one of the hackers announced with a message on the Ethereum blockchain that they were actually saving the money. The hacker said that they were just saving the money from other hackers, that they were white hat hackers, which I'm sure a lot of our listeners know, but white hat and black hat are popular distinctions to talk about hackers who are either bad or good. And the hacker also said that they would return the money, but keep like a tip for their service.
I give 80% back. The rest is the tips for me saving your money, the hacker wrote.
Interesting definition of a tip, I have to say.
Yeah. It's interesting also because this is not the first time. This has become some sort of a trend in the cryptocurrency world. Sometimes when there's some vulnerability, some major hack, some hacker comes out and says, "Hey, I'm the good guy here. I'm stopping the bad guys. I'm stealing the money, but don't worry, I'll return it." The biggest example was the PolySwarm incident, which was last summer, I think. In that case, the hacker actually stole $600 million. Initially, they didn't say anything about, you know, their good intentions, but the company posted messages on the blockchain calling the hacker Mr. White Hat.
You mean the Poly Network hack?
Yeah, Poly Network, sorry. Yeah. PolySwarm is another thing. Apologies. Yeah, Poly Network. The Poly Network posted these messages pleading with the hacker, which seemed, to be honest, pretty desperate. Nobody really thought it was going to work. And against all odds, actually, the hacker was like, you know what? Yeah, here's your money back. It got so bizarre that the company even promised a bug bounty, which is not exactly how this works. They also promised the hacker a job as a chief security advisor or something like that. Eventually the money was returned. The hacker didn't get the job, I think. And as far as we know, and everyone was happy. And in this case, it happened, the same thing happened. This one hacker that called themselves White Hat, they returned $1.4 million, I think, around that at the time. But there were other hackers involved and not all the money has been returned. And what's happening right now is that there's still users getting hacked because they haven't seen the public announcement. You know, they haven't checked Multichain's Twitter account. They haven't checked their blog post. They just didn't know about it. So I've been scrolling a little bit on the Multichain's public Telegram channel, and there's still people complaining about getting hacked, asking whether their funds will be returned or reimbursed. Multichain has been really bad at communicating throughout this whole thing. you know, when they announced the vulnerability, somehow they called this fixed. They said that the hack was contained. Sorry, not fixed. They said that the hack was contained, which is not really a word that I would use when, you know, there's countless users that can be hacked anytime. So the communication wasn't ideal. Obviously, you know, the original sin, quote unquote, was that they were forced to announce this publicly because they couldn't change the, they couldn't fix the vulnerability themselves. And yeah, this is still happening. The good news is that when the security company called DDoub found the issue, they, you know, they alerted Multichain, worked with them, and it actually turned out that it could have been much worse. At the beginning, when the company found the vulnerability, the flaw, they estimate that there were $2 billion in cryptocurrency exposed. Luckily, Multichain was able to contact some of the wallets with the most money. I guess in that case, they had ways to contact them. And, you know, they told them to plug the hole. And so they were able to, like, go down, like, limit the damage to $3 to $4 million, which is still a lot of money. And also, you know, it's great that they, you know, they protected the users with the most money, but some of the people that are losing money now are just, you know, average internet users who maybe have just a few $1,000s. Maybe it's some of their savings is in crypto. So yeah, you know, these are not the guys that are going to get the headlines because they only lose, you know, a few $1,000s, but for them, this may be very, very important.
I find this whole idea of, like, the self-described white hat, like, so fascinating, because we've seen this, like, over and over and over in crypto, like, throughout the years. Because, like, it's just such a perfect, like, result of, like, just the nature of the blockchain. Like, you have this vulnerability, it's not easily fixed, and, like, meanwhile, anyone in the entire world at any time of day can, like, exploit it and just run away. So, like, this confluence of factors means that, like, you know, if you're, like, a good guy, like, you have to just, like, jump into action and hack the shit out of everybody, and then, like, ideally, like, give it back. But, like, the Poly Network thing is super interesting, because it's like, I mean, was this guy a white hat initially? Like, I have my doubts about that. Like, maybe, you know, Tether froze, like, his funds, and he was like, this isn't going as well as I thought. Maybe I can just become a white hat. You know what I mean? Like, because, like, there's also, like, a level of anonymity here. And, like, all of these negotiations are happening in public on the blockchain itself. It's just such a wild scene.
I really like this from one of your stories, Lorenzo, from the Multichain. Well received. Thank you for your honesty. One victim who lost nearly $1 million in Ether and offered a 50 Ethereum, roughly 150,000 tip, wrote in a blockchain message to the hacker. I can't think of any other instance where if someone robbed me of nearly $1 million, I'm going to be thanking them after they return it. Right. It is a really weird phenomenon, Jordan. You're right.
Yeah, it's truly bizarre. And it's been happening so many times that, you know, you have to wonder whether this is actually now, like, I wonder if this Multichain white hat was inspired by previous ones or just wanted the, you can't even say that they want the fame or the notoriety, because they're just anonymous people, right, on the blockchain.
Not with that much. Does the fame or the notoriety matter when there's that much money on the line? Really? You know, it seems like easy pickings to me.
Yeah, I mean, this guy or this person, we don't know if it was a guy, this person could have just easily kept the money, ran away, used, like, a tumbling or, you know, like, one of those services that basically makes it harder to trace their crypto, and enjoyed the money. So, yeah, I really wish we knew who this person was. There was also another interesting angle that I didn't mention about the Multichain hack, is that some people now say, like, some security experts say that what Multichain should have done is hack the users themselves, like, hack their own users, right, and so to protect the money. So basically go into every wallet that was vulnerable, take the money, and then, you know, once the users change their settings, return the money, which honestly, that would have been what the ideal scenario here. I don't know why they didn't do it, to be honest. They haven't really answered any of our questions.
hacking is both the problem and the solution to so many things in this world, it turns out.
It feels like America's gun debate all over again in some ways.
We all just hack the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll even out.
I mean, you're really, it's your fault for not bringing a Winchester rifle with you when you're traveling across the country with your family trying to start a new life in California, right?
But don't worry, I have a bazooka. So.
Yeah, right.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So do you think is it possible for this space to get cleaned up, be more secure, or is this just going to keep happening? Is this a feature of stuff that's off the chain having to interact with things that are on the chain?
I personally think there's lots of room for services to improve here. Like the space is very new. And like, as Lorenzo was saying earlier, like it's just very new. There's not a lot of investment in cybersecurity in a lot of instances. And we're also seeing like in particular with like OpenSea and MetaMask and just things like that. Like these are really like centralized things being built on top of a decentralized ecosystem. And we're seeing like where all of these issues arise. I'm somewhat optimistic that like with time and better engineering and exploration that like there will be better, like more on-chain solutions that like minimize some of the jankiness here that leaves a lot of room. So like I do think that like just with time and engineering, like a lot of this will get better. And like there are people building like alternative solutions right now, but I mean, this is always going to be an element of it. Like, you know, my phone is ringing off the hook some days with like scammers calling me, and like that's not a risk to me. But if I was like an older person, maybe I'd pick up the phone and give them all my money. Like, people are literally calling me trying to get my money. Like, that's just happening to me. It's happening to like all of us. And like, so like we look at the blockchain and I'm like, maybe this isn't such an aberration for how things just go.
That's fair. I mean, I basically don't answer phone calls, right? Unless it's somebody that's saved in my phone book or I'm expecting someone, I just don't answer them. Because that's what it is. It's always somebody trying to either sell me an extended warranty for my car or trick me into giving them money.
You mean a warranty?
The warranty.
I always mispronounce it. It's very interesting. I agree with Jordan, by the way. I think it's still a relatively new space. I think also something that we need to remember is that the cybersecurity world has kind of a hostile attitude towards cryptocurrency. So that there's very little crossover between the two industries for now. But you're starting to see companies, like security companies specifically, specialized in cryptocurrency, distributed apps, smart contracts, and stuff like that. So there's definitely space there for people in cybersecurity to get in and make a lot of money securing software that it's not that well coded sometimes. A lot of easy bugs.
Yeah, I noticed this in some of your stories, Lorenzo, that when you talk to cybersecurity experts, they can be quite flippant and mean. So it makes sense that this will kind of transition to the more existential questions I want to get to now. It does seem like there is no sympathy out there online for you if you bought an ape and your ape got stolen. No matter who you are, if you've bought into this, people have a certain view of you. And it's hard when, like, you know, Paris Hilton and Jimmy Fallon are up there showing off their apes and is incredibly cringe and makes everyone sad and angry, right? But I mean, I do feel like this stuff is going to be sticking around and may get normalized. And JP, you and I were talking earlier this morning about how weird social media has been around the crypto space this week. What are you seeing? What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, it all stems from pain and anxiety. Like, yeah, like just, I mean, things are not going well price-wise. A lot of people who are writing about this are invested a lot in it. And I mean, like, to be clear, like, I have like a very small amount of like cryptocurrency investments. Like, if like I ever wrote about those, I would like disclose it. But that has given me like a really interesting perspective, even though it's like a very small amount, like not enough for me to care about price movements at all. But like it really kind of like has like solidified in my mind that like, wow, all of these people are motivated by panic. Like, I used to just read these tweets and be like, what's behind that? But now I know what's behind that. You are freaking out because you have like 20x leverage on like Binance or wherever you're trading, and you're getting wrecked. And that's what it is. So like, yeah, I mean, it's been, I don't know. I don't want to be too flippant about people's livelihoods, obviously, although I realize my profile picture right now is kind of cutting against that.
I shouldn't be laughing, but there's so much Schadenfreude in me towards these
for
people.
Sure. And really not is. Unearned Schadenfreude, not unearned Schadenfreude, certainly. But like, you know, like a lot of like cryptocurrency publications are posting like, wow, Bitcoin went up 8% today. And it's like, oh God, what kind of mental state you have to be in to be like, oh my God, yes, yes, yes. Thank God. Like reading that news.
Well, it's just an opportunity to buy the dip, right? You just buy more Bitcoin now, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, people made fun of Eric Adams, New York's like mayor, for like losing money in like Bitcoin. Which, like, yes, but like, I mean, I have to say, like, he put 10K into Bitcoin at almost like a 50% dip. That may end up being like a good call at the end of the day. We will see.
The other thing I want to talk to you about, Jordan, that has been kind of blowing up in this space is this Dan Olsen video that everyone's talking about. If anyone doesn't know who Dan Olsen is, he's a YouTuber named Foldable Human. He typically produces stuff more about like film and how film works. He's got a great video about like the editing in the original Suicide movie and or Suicide Squad movie and how it weakens the film. But he put out this 2-hour, 20-minute documentary essentially about NFTs and about crypto. And I forced you to watch it. And I wanted to get your kind of, you know, as we're talking about this and we're looking at this space, What do you make of that? And what do you think people should take away from it? Is it a good like primer for people? Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I mean, I watched like 75% of it. It's okay. Pretty long. It's like 2.5 hours long. The first like 45 minutes. I mean, it's just like an explainer of the blockchain. But like, so I think what's probably most interesting about it is the fact that it went viral at all. Like the actual content is pretty fine. Like it's obviously like a very negative take on it, but it's not like super wrong. And like if you're just like a lay person and you watch it, like, and like you come away from it like hating NFTs, and I mean it's not gonna like do you a huge disservice, that video, to be completely honest. Although like I will say, like, I think some parts of it are not so good. Like there was a claim that like Waka Flocka had like his NFTs hacked, that was just like put in that video, and then like now it's just like viral that like, oh, if someone sends you an NFT token, it can like hack all your shit, which like is, as far as I'm aware, like not true. Like I think that's probably just misinformation that's gone viral because of this video, which is not good. And Lorenzo asked just, you know, one of our experts, and they were also like, I don't think that's like, that doesn't seem to be what happened, because we wrote about or Lorenzo, you wrote about, and I edited a piece about like phishing tokens, and that's definitely a thing, but it's mostly like this token has the name of a website that if you go to and you connect your wallet, hacks your stuff. That definitely happens. And some other stuff in it, like that NFTs are a scheme to like raise the price of Ether. Well, I don't think that has worked out exactly as we are seeing. The price of Ether is not doing so great, despite the NFT market doing pretty fine. But I think, you know, I've been thinking a lot about like NFTs and like mostly like the reaction to them and why it's been so widespread and so visceral. And like, you know, a lot of people talked about the environmental stuff, but then like these other blockchains came along, they're like, oh, we don't have an environmental footprint, so don't worry. Okay, so that critique's out the door, but like people are still like very upset about it. And that video like kind of, I think, mentioned what I think is really kind of the root of it. And that's like, I mean, NFTs are a perfect encapsulation of capitalism. Like, I think like it goes back to the enclosure of the commons, you know, like when people first put up a fence around a piece of land and said, yeah, this is mine now. You're not allowed to hunt on this. This is mine. And it says so on this piece of paper. Like, there probably were people at that time who were like, what the fuck, this is bullshit. Like, this is just like a forest. Like, this isn't yours, just it's on this piece of paper. But like, fast forward 100 years, like our entire society is based off of property rights.
And poachers on the king's land are being executed for shooting a deer that their father would have been able to kill and eat, right?
Right, exactly. So like, I mean, all of this is like extremely artificial. Like, it's like, as bullshit, like it's bullshit in the sense that it's like, it's artificial. Like, it's not real. Like, it's a ledger somewhere, like on a bunch of computers. It's a list on a bunch of computers that says like someone owns this. But I mean, what it is doing is like, to a certain convincing degree, making information, this thing that is like definitionally non-scarce, infinitely copyable, abundant, it's information. This thing that like in the 90s that like, you know, people were like, information wants to be free. That's what we thought. But I kind of have to wonder, like, if it really only seemed that way because of how sort of undeveloped within capitalism the internet was as a technology. And that as soon as we kind of like got the ability to sort of, you know, artificially, yes, abstractly, yes, but also convincingly say that a piece of information is now scarce. You know, there's almost only one kind of way it can go under our like current capitalist system based on property rights. Like, the idea of turning this definitionally non-scarce thing, which is information, into a scarce good by some artificial means of enclosure that the majority of society, the people who are in control, agree on, that's like, that's a dream, obviously. Like, I mean, that's the dream. Like, information is like, it's like the stars. You look, there's infinite stars. There's infinite information. But if you can convince someone to say, you know, oh, you're going to like buy one of these stars because I write down on this piece of paper, it's yours now. Like, that's kind of what it is. But like, but if enough people agree on it, then because, you know, it makes money and it's an industry, that's probably the way it's going to go. And I think that's what people are reacting to. Not unfairly, because like it is this like imposition of capitalism on something that for so long we've like believed or hoped was like resistant to that for reasons of science and physics, because it's information. But like now we have this like emergent regime that is trying to impose like an element of artificial scarcity on that for no reason except for like commerce, essentially. And I completely understand why that is like something people are reacting against. And I'm honestly like even like happy that people are kind of zoning in on this, because I feel like we're getting closer and closer. We're getting closer and closer to like what this thing is really about and reacting directly to that. So in terms of like the video that went viral, like I think that is kind of the most interesting part of it to me.
I think that's a really good place to, I think that's a really good message to go out on. I think you've identified definitely what, like what, where my feelings come from when I see this, this idea that we need to financialize everything, that everything needs to be a market, is disgusting to me personally. In having grown up in that 90s,
you know,
having grown up in that 90s milieu of information wants to be free, we have this beautiful thing that people want to keep putting fences around. And I say no, fuck that. Lorenzo Franceschi Bicarai, Jordan Pearson, thank you both for coming on to Cyber and walking us through all these crypto hacks and what is going on. If you tuned in late, You can hear this as a podcast will be going up tomorrow. And we will be back next week again here on twitch.tv/motherboardTV, broadcasting next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern, another episode. Thank you all so much for showing up. And some people have said in the chat the last couple times, hack the planet. Hack the planet and keep those damn apes from going too viral.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.